Hi everyone, my name is Binaz Jacob and you're listening to my show, Never Overnight. If you enjoyed today's conversation, feel free to subscribe to the channel by searching Never Overnight on wherever you stream your podcast from. This show is a conversation that focuses on the struggle, the success, and the story in between. Today's episode is with Marianne J. George. She's a part of Maverick City Music, which is a Grammy Award-winning American contemporary worship music collective. She has also toured with Kirk Franklin and released her own solo album, titled Not Just Stories. Before she transitioned into music full-time, she worked in mental health. And in this episode, we talk about her upbringing, her career mental health, where she is now, and so much more. Marianne has experienced struggle, success, and this is her story.
Hey guys, so good to be here.
I was looking at our conversation the other day and I realized that it started in August of 2020. So I have tried forever to get you on this podcast and now here you are.
I reached out to you because you were interviewing my friend.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, I loved the interview. I was telling you, I liked it. There's just not many like brown people are doing this. So it's kind of like, yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah. And since then, it's been great conversations. But just looking at that from August 2020 to now, like how much your life has kind of just taken off in all these different ways, right?
Yeah, that year was a really monumental year for our group.
Yeah.
We just put out so much music and I feel like those were the songs that kind of started gaining a lot of traction. So yeah, so much has changed.
Yeah. But before we like dive into that, let's go right to the beginning of who you are and where your story started, right? So did you know that you've always wanted to be involved in music, or is that something that you kind of experienced over time through situations?
No, I've always like, I knew that I was gonna do something in music in terms of like hobbies. Like I always knew I would be involved in like a worship team, and I've always done music for fun. It was never something I considered doing it professionally, but it was something I definitely considered like dabbling in my entire life. So I've always been, I grew up in church, so went to church, did worship teams, led at conferences, things like that. So I kind of always knew that would always be a part of me. I would always find a way to express myself through music, but never thought that I don't even think I knew it was an option to pursue it professionally for myself.
Got it. And did you have a relationship with anyone, whether it be someone at church or anything like that, that did you feel at any time empowered to be like, yeah, this music thing is something that I can take off with? Or was it more like, hey, the impact I can have is more behind the scene as a songwriter or something like that, or what?
Well, no, people told my parents, actually. They've come to my parents and they're like, your daughter should really pursue it professionally. Like she would be so good at it. And my dad and my mom would be like, yeah, you know, that's why, you know, she's at church. I grew up in a church, thankfully, that was so, there were like so many talented people at my church, like older sisters, older women that I looked up to that were like so good at singing, so good at leading. I think the first person that ever like kind of did something with it was Sean Samuel. Mm-hmm. And he went to our church and he had that whole band, like they were called Lighthouse and they changed to Up After. So I like watched their journey. I thought that was cool. Also to note, they were all men. And mm-hmm. So I think it was just like not something I felt like I could do as a female specifically and a brown female.
Mm-hmm. And seeing yourself now, like, would you tell anything to that person? Like now, like looking back,
I feel like I have a daughter now. So I do feel like the things that I want to do with her would be just different. I was thinking about this last night. I feel like as children of immigrants, it would be a shame if we continued to live our lives like we're immigrants. And we're not anymore. And so my parent ceiling is now my floor. I get to reach for even higher heights. And so I think a lot of times because our parents didn't really know better. I feel like I'm kind of actually like a second gen because my parents came a little bit younger, but still I feel like so much of his like mentality was just like security driven. So he's always pushing for me to do a career path that's like secure and not risky. You know, anything in the arts is very risky. So I feel like I was just not encouraged to really pursue something I was passionate about, but really, I mean, in the end I ended up pursuing mental health and that's something I am passionate about, but it took like a lot of convincing because I was pushed mainly towards medicine and stuff. But like when it comes to my kid now, like I really am, like, I feel very privileged to be able to like look at her and be like, what are you actually good at? Like, what is it that you feel like drives you? And like, kind of, I have the opportunity now to kind of push her in that direction and not worry so much about security or feel like, you know, she has to fight to get her voice heard. So I do feel like I would encourage women to just continue doing what they are passionate about and what they love to do. Don't let a cultural expectation stop you from pursuing something that, you know, you like.
So you getting into mental health, you did two really unconventional careers back to back. What was the, I guess, the parents' reactions or people's reactions in terms of you already doing one unconventional career, which was getting to mental health?
I think they got to a point, this is going to sound really bad, they just got to a point where they were like, I guess she's going to do what she wants.
Yeah. So I can totally relate to you just because like going into radio for myself, I kind of sucked at just about everything that I was supposed to be stereotypically good at. And then eventually you realize, all right, I can make jokes about my failures. And I didn't know that could turn into a career, but did, you know. But sticking with mental, why do you feel mental health in our brown community, Indian community, Malayali community, why do you feel like mental health is not really talked about or shined a light on?
Because I think our Indian culture and community is very, it's a shame-based culture. So it's so much of like what we go through is shamed and encouraged to be swept under the rug. And so any sort of unearthing of anything that can affect reputation or make you look bad, quote unquote, is not encouraged. And they just prefer you put your best foot forward all the time. I think it's changing, honestly, with our generation. I think we're encouraging our parents even to, you know, share about some of the things that they struggled with. I don't know about like life in India because I haven't lived there, but being in the US, I think so much of like immigrant mentality is in our families. And so like when you come here, you have to put your best foot forward. You almost have to like prove to people that you have what it takes to make it. And so just naturally, when you think that way, you're not going to share about your weaknesses. You're not going to talk about what hurts you. You're not going to talk. You just toughen up and you kind of move through. But like I said earlier, like it would be a shame for us to kind of stick or stay in that mindset. It's really kind of like sweet and also like sad. At this age, like, you know, we're 30 plus years old, talking to our parents and just listening to some of the things that they've had to struggle to go through to get here and the toll that it's taken on their mental health and the ways that they've proven to us that, or they've shown us that they're extremely strong, you know, strong-willed and courageous and brave for making certain decisions. And so I think like, it's just a mentality that they've receive coming here.
Yeah, I think growing up in minority communities, for some reason, the men can't talk about what they're feeling. Yeah. Women are told that their feelings don't matter. And so neither party talks to each other about it.
Right.
And then it's really just shoved under the floor. And then we, growing up as kids, we compartmentalize it all. Right. And then after that, any opportunity that I got when I got into my 30s, all of a sudden, everything I compartmentalized and never attacked when I was a young kid, or the traumas that I went through, it was just like, oh, wait, now I can't take a compliment. Why? Yeah. Why am I, you know, and it always seems to come in the form of a compliment.
Right. It's true. Yeah. I mean, I'm still working on it. I feel like it comes in compliments or even achievements where you feel like you've achieved something and then it's like, okay, what's the next thing? Or like, no, this is not good enough, or I need to keep working my way up. And then you like, get to the top. And you're just like, oh, okay. Like, what's next? I don't. And then you've lost so much, like along the way. Like you've lost friends, or you've lost your connection to family. Like, you know, like. And so I do think there's like a healthy balance between it all. But I think our generation is faced with the hard work of like unlearning it, because we have two distinct different cultures within us, right? We have our parents, and we have our cousins and stuff, and then we have our like friends who've grown up here. But I think it is funny that like our parents knew that they couldn't just assimilate with you know, all the white people that lived here or all the black people, they found each other. Somehow they knew that they needed each other. Yeah. And they just had an unsaid, like, they understood that, like, okay, they get what it's like.
Was it difficult to make that shift from mental health to music?
No, it was like, I knew this was the next thing. I like prayed about it. I felt a lot of peace about it. I actually felt like uneasy about looking for jobs, like for counseling. And then as soon as I like made the decision to go forward in it, I kind of had offers coming into to like write or like for publishing. And it was crazy because I don't really, I still to this day don't understand how that happened, because I had no experience in the industry, like nothing. So I don't get how it happened, but I literally prayed that if this was what God wanted me to do, like, I'm willing to do it. I just have to like, I'm just like, you have to create the avenues for me to do this, because I have no experience. Once I went into it, it kind of all just fell in my lap. And so I feel like that was a sign or a confirmation that I was, you know, something I was meant to do. So it wasn't, the transition was not hard for me.
Mm-hmm. You shared one time that one of your lifelong struggles is not feeling good enough. Because I imagine we're never able to overcome that. It's just a challenge on every stage that you're on, no matter mm-hmm. how bigger the stage is. How do you combat that feeling from where you are?
Yeah, I think it's something I still kind of struggle with sometimes. Like, I have to remind myself that I'm graced for the stages or the places I'm at, but also the rooms that I'm in. Like, I feel sometimes, because of my lack of experience, like I'm not good enough, or I don't know enough, or I'm always being afraid that I'm going to be taken advantage of, or like, you know, those type of feelings are always there. But I try to submit every single like opportunity I get, or any type of like next step in the journey for me. Like, I try to cover all of that with prayer. And then I also get into community with people I trust, like my best friends, who sometimes can see more potential in me than I see in myself.
They
encourage me. I love that. They just, you know, they're able to like speak truth and be like, Marianne, shut up. You did this already. Like, you know how to do it. So be like, okay, fine. Yeah, you're right. I know how to do this. I can. But I think like it's something I still struggle with. And I'm honestly like, I have to constantly remind myself of who I am. And like, I think thinking of past experiences where I really feel like God orchestrated everything, or like put together everything for me. I think back to those experiences and I'm like, okay, I can trust that he knows what he's doing. I might not feel qualified. And the reality is I'm probably not good enough. You know, I'm not, if I'm just doing this on my own and I have something and someone I can lean into and I can hold on to during these seasons, you know, of my life. And so I just kind of hold on to that truth, like of just reminding myself that this isn't about me at the end of the day. Like, it's not. And I think a lot of times the darkness can, you know, get you in your head about yourself and make you feel like you're not good enough. Yeah, you're not. Like, and I think the second you take it out of yourself and you just make it about something bigger than you, it actually just lessens the pressure or the stress of having to perform or to be a certain type of way or to reach a certain expectation or standard that people have placed on you. So that's helped me a lot right now, of just like realizing, okay, what do I have to lose really? Like, if this is not about me, I have nothing to lose.
I mean, it sounds like what you've done is that you've taken a lot of lessons that you've learned in your mental health career and you kind of applied it in your next career. Like, it's even more obvious now that you're supposed to transition exactly the way you were and the way you have, because you've taken those lessons from one and applied it to the other. Do you feel yourself like you're something that you kind of do that in your bad moments? You kind of just take your previous career lessons and applied it immediately to what you're going through now?
For sure. Like, I actually think to myself, I don't know that I would have been able to pursue music professionally had I not pursued counseling professionally, because so much of my mentality and the way that I thought was changed in those like 4 years that I went to school. Like, I feel like I'm able to look at people differently. I don't judge people like I used to. Like, I feel like so much of the way that I thought and the way that I viewed situations or individuals or cultures, it changed because I had a lot more grace for myself and I have a lot more grace for other people, because the reality is we are products of our environment and there is no such thing as like a good and a bad person. Like, I think we're all just like people making choices, and each choice stems from something deep. It stems from a situation or an experience that we've had. We're balls of experiences within a body. So I don't know that I would have been able to pursue music professionally had I not had that backbone of like the shift in the way that I thought. When anyone pursues mental health counseling, and they always require us to go to a certain number of sessions for ourselves, and they always remind us you can't walk other people through what you haven't walked through yourself. Yeah. And so I, you know, had to go through the hard work of looking at myself introspectively and kind of dealing with some stuff that I shoved under a rug or I didn't want to talk about. And so I think once I was able to have those conversations, I was able to go into writing rooms with the ability to become vulnerable quickly. I can share my story with you and we can write, because writing is such a intimate experience. And so, you know, any sort of intimate experience like that, you have to be able to be vulnerable and to share. And I don't know that I would have had that ability. And now I'm able to go into rooms and it's like therapy sessions. I mean, it feels like therapy sessions.
So you have your own album, you toured with Kirk Franklin, you have a Grammy. You know, one, like, does it hit you as often as it hits me when I think of you? Where it's just like, you know, like, okay. And
it doesn't.
How does that make you feel knowing that, hey, this is everything that I was able to do?
I do think it's really, really sweet to be able to like say that these things have happened to me. Okay, so one of the things I really did want to do, even before I got into MAV or anything, I wanted to release an album of my own. Did not know how that was going to happen. Like, I was just like, I don't know how it's going to happen. But so that's why I told myself, okay, probably once I'm like 30 plus years old, I'll have enough money to like have fund those things. Like, I can do it myself. So that part is crazy. Like, I feel like God honestly remembered that that was something I really wanted, and he gave me the opportunity to do it. And I feel like I'm really happy with how the album came out, the whole production, everything about it. Like, I'm so happy about it. But yeah, like when I think about all the things, like touring with Kirk Franklin, like never in my life would I have ever thought, I mean, a Grammy, like never. I literally sometimes feel like I am having an outer body experience and I'm watching like myself live this life. And I'm like, that's crazy. I don't know why. I actually like, I told my therapist like about this, because I'm like, I don't know why this stuff does not hit me. Like, I want it to hit me and I want to feel it all. But it's something I wonder, like, why it's not hitting me so much. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm grateful, because I feel like I could easily get stuck in that like headspace of like, whoa, I live such a crazy life. And to me, I think I have a really good balance of like the lives I live. But I don't feel like I have truly processed a lot of what I've done. Just to think about my life in 2019 till now, it's just so much has happened that I don't feel like it's humanly possible for us to like really process the amount of transition that has happened since then. Yeah. Like, I changed careers, I moved states, I had a kid, I released an album, I won a Grammy, I did two tours, like my group like is huge. I gained a following, I have a platform, I'm doing this full time. Like, it's just very hard for me to manage all the transition in my head. And then, you know, I get to a point where I'm like, oh my goodness, like, wow, it hits me all at once. Yeah. And I go through like a mental breakdown, and then, you know.
It might be a situation that hits you like afterwards, like after the... Yeah. You know, where like you're able to look back and it's like time to write your, yes, you know, your, yes, Marianne memoir, right?
About that, but maybe I do want to write a book. It would be cool to write a book.
Yeah, I thought the book is going to be called Not Just Stories. I don't know.
Oh. Wow. Venmo a dollar for that fantastic joke.
But like, considering everything that you've been fortunate enough to accomplish, like, how do you keep yourself motivated? You know, because a lot of people, when I've talked to them in terms of like, if they win one Grammy or they won an Emmy, like immediately afterwards, they're like, yeah, the motivation is now the next one. You have a tour with a big artist. You're just like, all right, cool. Now I need more tours with big artists, because if anything's less than that, that means my career is declining.
No, it's true. It's true, especially like in music. Like, it's because you're very public. It's like, it's a numbers game also. So it's like, if you don't reach the next thing, you're not as relevant, and then you suffer financially from that. But no, I feel like being brown really helps, because you're just kind of like always thinking of the next thing. It's like ingrained, it's in our blood to just look for the next thing. But I think one of the things that has actually worked in my favor is like being part of a group versus like a solo artist. So I always have the ability to build up my own solo career. So like, I think the pinnacle of success for me will be when I win my own Grammy. That would be like a big deal for me. I don't know where I would go from there. I probably would just continue making music and wanting to win Grammys for those albums too. Yeah. But I feel like the motivation helps when I'm part of a group, because it's like, the group wins things, but it's not it is a personal win, but at the same time, it's not like, it's a group effort, right? So it's like a collaborative win. It's a collaborative loss when we lose things, but we're always together, regardless of what it is. Everything that we win or lose or go through, we're experiencing it together. I'm able to separate myself from that experience and be like, okay, like, what do I want for myself? And I don't know. I feel like now that I'm in it, I also feel like I want to show other girls or guys who are in this, like, I'm just like, this is not just a win for me. It's also a win for them. I want to show and prove to them that they can do it. Like, we deserve to see people like us in these spaces. And so I think that's a really big motivator for me too. Like, wanting to share, you know, my success with kids and girls that look like me, women that look like me, you know, men that grew up like me. Like, I want to show them that this is possible and that we can do this, but also at the same time that God wants us here. I feel like God never intended for brown people to only be lawyers and doctors and engineers. And like, you know, I think he wanted us to be radio people, in radio, people in music, people in art, like we should be in those spaces. And so I motivate myself with that knowledge, and I try not to get pressured by it, but I really do try to tell myself, like, this is not just for you, it's for everyone.
One time you were asked about being a role model for South Asian women. You answered how many don't understand the cost that comes.
Oh, yeah.
What is this cost that other people don't know about?
So I think you lose your freedom. There's an element of your freedom that you have to be willing to give up when you become a role model. You don't get the freedom of, you know, making mistakes. As, you know, bluntly as I can put it, like, when you choose to be a role model, you are choosing to put your life out there on display. You're choosing to have people criticize or scrutinize every decision you make, whether personal or professional. You put your family in a public place as well. Like, and so I think those costs are things that people are never going to see, because they're going to see me wearing a sari at the Grammys. They're going to see me dancing on tour with Kirk Franklin. They're going to see those things, but they're not going to see the times where I struggle in my relationships with my friends or in my marriage or with my kid, like, you know, not being able to see her as often. You know, every decision has to be under the lens of, how do people view this? How would I be perceived for this type of decision? Like, I can't be in certain places. No one's thinking about these things. Yeah. You know, there's just so many things that people are not realizing. It's a cost. Like, I said yes to this. So in a lot of ways, I remind myself, like, this is bigger than me. I've said yes to this, and I'm willing to do what it takes. But it's very, very overwhelming. I don't love the idea of role models. Like, I just think that sometimes people tend to put a lot of pressure on these people and put them on pedestals. But we're human. We fail. We make mistakes like you do. And I'm not going to put that onus on like one person to dictate like everything I believe in. That's why like my Instagram bio, it literally says I'm more like you than you think. I drool in my sleep. Like I go to the bathroom like you. I fart like you do. Like I do all these things like you do. I'm not any different.
That really sounds like a great snippet. If I could just cut just that part.
There you just go. Yeah, that, just do it. No, I knew you were going to eat it up. You're going to eat it up. That's why I said it.
The title of this episode is I Fart Just Like You.
Marianne J. George from Maverick City Music, y'all. We all fart.
So it's almost like the price of fame is kind of taken away from the individuality a little bit, right? In terms of like, you know,
lose yourself in it.
And I don't even know if any role model has asked for themselves to be the role models they are. It just sounds like it was just placed on them.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think they're like, hey, look at me, I'm a role model. Like, yeah. No one ever like asks for that.
Right.
But you're right. I do feel like you tend to lose yourself a little bit in it. And I feel like that's the biggest challenge that I think artists in general have today. It's this balance of like, what does my audience perceive me as, or what does my audience want me to be? And then like, who am I really?
Given everything you've accomplished as an artist and touring and Grammy, and the recent highlight in your life was becoming a mom, right? Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this in the beginning as well, but we can dive into it a little more in terms of like the lessons that you've learned in your life so far. Like, how do you think that is affecting or going to affect it the way you raise your child?
I think I wouldn't place as many expectations on her. Or I would encourage her to make decisions that she feels good about because she knows that she can do it, not like because someone's pushing her to do it. I'm saying all this now. I don't know, because I feel like the way that I think has changed from 2019 to now. So I can't even imagine like another 4 or 5 years pass. Like I imagine I'll probably think differently, but I really want to encourage her and empower her to make decisions that she feels really strongly about, not based on something that I've told her to do or something that, you know, John, her dad tells her to do. But like our only expectation is to be kind to people, to love God and love others. When I looked at my life as a kid, I so badly wanted to make my parents happy. I think that was the only thing. Like I wanted to be a PA to make them happy. Like, but now I think they were looking at it as like, if my daughter is a PA, she's successful because she has achieved financial security. But to me, financial security is helpful, but it's not a measure of success in my eyes.
What would be the word success for you right now? Like, what would it mean?
I think for me, if I can live a peaceful life, like I think to me, the security of knowing that I have a support system and I have people in my life that care about me, I think that's success. Like to build that kind of community around yourself and to know who you really are, your identity. I think those things are success now.
A last question that I got for you. You talked about this earlier as well, but the whole point of this podcast, Never Overnight, it's a motivational one, right? Where we're able to kind of just tell people that are, you know, coming up in any industry, in this conversation, I'll call little Marianne's out there, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of like, what would be the advice that you would give to the current generation or the next generation of women or men that just want to pursue just an unconventional path?
I would, one, encourage you to work with what you have right now and be really intentional about what you want to do. People ask me all the time, if you want to be an artist, right? I'm like, you have everything at your disposal. Believe the heck in yourself. Believe that you have the ability to change the world. When you walk into a room, like whatever you want people to feel, act as if they do. So like walk into the room with confidence, knowing that you are graced for this, you are equipped to do this. And then two, I would say work with what you have and start small. Like if it's artist, if you're wanting to be an artist, like start posting covers. That's how I honestly started with Mav. Like I would just take my guitar and just play songs on my Instagram and post it. And I would encourage people to do that. If you're a writer, like, start a blog, like, write posts and like share it on your public feeds. Like, I think those are two things that I would really encourage you to do. Like, believe in yourself, work with what you have, and be the best at what you have with you. So I would encourage people to do those two things for the little Marianne's out there, which feels really weird to say, but yeah, that's what I would say.
It sounds like you're taking up space in every room you go. Is that was also another bit of advice that I caught from you, and I'm just like, oh man, yeah. Like that has so many layers to it in itself.
Take that snippet, okay? Take that snippet.
No, I've decided we're talking about farting. Listen, thank you so much for just coming on and having this valuable conversation with me, and I really appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
Of course, thank you.
Thank you to Marianne for sharing her story with me. If you're a fan of Never Overnight, there will be more episodes to listen to. Subscribe to the channel, leave a review, share it with your friends, all by searching Never Overnight on wherever you stream your podcast from. And while you're at it, feel free to follow the show on Instagram @Never Overnight. My name is Binaj, and as always, thanks for listening.